And a good Saturday morning. Well, it's a good Saturday morning to stay and listen to the radio. Other than that, mediocre Saturday morning. It's definitely one I should have had a second cup of coffee. But fortunately, the vibrant and vivacious Kevin Power, Ann Turner, and Jess Turner are here from Power Mortgages to wake me up. Hello.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
A wet Saturday morning to you, Dave.
Good morning.
There we go. Vibrant and vivacious. And on the show today, of course, we always welcome your calls about anything to do with the mortgage industry or getting your mortgage. 519-570-2545 out of town, 1-800-570-5715 or *570 hands-free on your cell phone. Today, we're going to talk about what you should be looking for in a lending institution and what lenders are now doing as business practice to get, keep, and increase your business with them. And when you're out looking for a mortgage, it's kind of important to know what you're going to be faced with and the kinds of decisions you'll have to make, a lot of which have nothing to do with getting a mortgage. So today, we're going to go over some important questions you should be asking the person who's trying to get your mortgage business. And what would you like to say about these questions before we get into them?
Well, this is our last show for the summer, and we'll be back in the fall. And this is prime time for people to be out looking for properties. And in the course of that, of course, they're going to have to get a mortgage. My feeling on it has been for many years that the nature of our relationships with the people that we do business with has changed. And we've gone from a society in which we knew the people we did business with, our parents knew the people we did business with, to a place where large corporations now seek to have our loyalty, although we don't know who the heck they are anymore, we don't know what their business practices are anymore, and we don't know if they have any interest in protecting us and our rights as consumers. And that goes for all businesses. You know, like the neighborhood diner is almost a thing of the past, where, you know, or the neighborhood grocery store or the neighborhood butcher or that sort of thing. We no longer know these people, but the big corporations want us to think that we know them, when in fact we don't. And policies are being made for us at a very high corporate level that has absolutely nothing to do with being a good neighbor or a good local businessman. And yes, you may know, you know, the people that work in your bank. They may be friends or neighbors, but they're governed by the policies of the banking system. And businesses aren't what they were before. You take an operation like Shoppers, where you used to go in and get hair care products, things like bandages, and your prescriptions. Now you go in and you're grocery shopping. You know, you've got mailing services. I mean, you can even go in and buy games, video games, and video game players and that sort of thing.
I was at a shoe outlet in Buffalo on the weekend, and they had a candy aisle in the shoe store. What?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's always buy candy when I buy shoes.
Well, yeah.
They go together logically.
Well, they want to make sure that you walk somewhere to get something that you like to ensure that your shoes fit.
But I mean, this is exactly what I mean, is that people, corporations used to sell or be in one kind of business. For the lenders now, for the big bankers, they're not in the banking, just in the banking business anymore, you know, where you put your money in, you take your money out, they make loans to you, you know, and that sort of thing, and you're offered a toaster for a new account. They now are in the business of selling us credit cards, selling us home equity lines of credit, insurance, life, automobile, home insurance, title insurance, all of that, mutual funds, RSPs. There's just such a whole host of products that they are now in the business of selling you that it ups the ante in terms of corporate profits and what they want from each customer. And it's not just a small part of their business. They want all your business, whether that's in your best interest or not. And part of one of these products are these one-step products or all-in-one products that virtually lock the bank customer, the lending bank customer, into this institution, regardless of how well they are treating them. You know, once you're in there, locked in there, it's very difficult to get outside of that spider's web of things that they've got their hands on in terms of your life. There's an old saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket, and I am a real big believer of that, and especially given that business is no longer done at the local level. Business is done at the national or the international level, and those decisions coming down either nationally or internationally really aren't in the best interests of the end users of whatever product it is. It's in the best interest of the large corporation.
I'm a firm believer in old adage sayings as well, Dave, and I have one that says separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. And by that, as it relates to your relationship with financial institutions, really gets down to, number one, should you have all of your business with one particular financial institution? And for a very, very long period of time, we have basically diversified our financial needs through a number of different financial institutions for very good reasons. And one of the reasons is, number one, financial institutions seem to try harder to get your business when they don't have all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually use it to your advantage. Number two, you're not going to be in a position where you're really going to be held hostage for having all of your banking tied to one particular source. And today, and actually for a number of years, financial institutions, if you want to become a client off a bank, even to open a checking account today, they will actually perform a credit check to open a bank account. And if you don't make the grade on credit, a lot of them will not even let you open a bank account, because they're working off the basis that if you don't have the potential to become a full-service client, why would they take you in to operate a checking account where they're going to make $2 or $3 or $5 a month and not be able to get you into a mortgage or get you into a personal loan or a line of credit or the other services that they do offer?
Insurance, RSPs, mutual funds.
Wow. So if you're someone who's unfortunate enough to have bad credit, how do you get a bank account?
payday loan companies. That's really the basis in which the payday loan companies are building their client base. They will cash checks for people who do not have bank accounts, and simply because of the banking practices of not opening bank accounts to perceived undesirable potential clients.
Okay, utter silence.
So much for your friendly neighborhood banker, right?
I'm really shocked by that. I didn't know that. And, I'm kind of just sort of speechless at that. But, yeah, you're right. They do such a good job of marketing themselves as still the old-fashioned bank. They're your friend. They're your pal. They're the people just around the corner. But
I've known a lot of people in my lifetime, Dave, and I've known a lot of people that have worked in a lot of different industries. And I can honestly say, out of all the people that I've known and all the people that I've met, I've never had a friend who worked at a bank. I know somebody who works at a bank, but I would never perceive them to be a friend.
Okay. Well, there we go. And once again, that's Kevin's opinion, everyone.
But it's just the way our society is changing, right? Big corporations are taking over small businesses, and the way they do business is different from the way small businesses do business. And that's just the way it is. What Canadians have to do is change the way they think about these businesses. And there was a time when your local bank or your local finance company, the person that worked there, the people that worked there, you knew them and they knew you and they knew all about you and your family. And banking was a personal thing. Was a highly personal thing. But that has changed. As the banks have grown in size, as the lenders and finance companies have grown in size and grown to become multinational industries, the way they do business has changed as well. And out of necessity. What we have to do is change the way we think and say, this is no longer what it used to be. They aren't loyal to me. And I shouldn't be loyal to them. We have a business relationship, not blind loyalty, going on here. And everything that you're doing, whether it's with a lender or your grocery store or whatever, should be done on that basis. And I'm sure all of us remember when we used to have small markets like Dutch Boy and Central, where Central was a small owner-operator thing. And, you know, when business, like doing business like that, was far different from what it is now. Where we get that kind of business now is at St. Jacob's Market or something like that, or downtown Kitchener Market.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not getting it in the big grocery stores, the big chain stores. You know, even I had to change pharmacies a few years ago because Shoppers fired my pharmacist that I'd had for years. I'd go in and she would know exactly what I was coming for. I could talk to her about my needs, mm-hmm. and she knew everything that was going on in my life medically and pharmaceutically. When they fired her, I'm like, who knows me? And I stayed with them for a while, but the pharmacist was never the same twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'd fired this excellent pharmacist for a series of people that came in, then I never knew any of them. I am now with a pharmacy where the pharmacists know me, and they know my medical background, and they know my doctor. And that's a true personal relationship, and they're not part of a big chain.
It's very, very hard to get that personal touch anymore in just about any aspect of our life. So,
where I can find it, Dave, I seek it out. You know, in especially important things like medical care and that. But there's some places where you just can't avoid it, and you have to be involved with the corporations.
Yeah, or perhaps getting a mortgage. Where would you go to get the personal touch there? I have no idea.
And there is a significant difference between getting a personal touch and a personal slap.
Mm-hmm. So ask for Ann when you call Power Mortgages. Kevin Power, Ann Turner, and Jess Turner are my guests from Power Mortgages. 69 Regina Street North in Waterloo and online at powermortgages.ca. When we come back, we'll get into the questions you should be asking a lender before you sign on the dotted line for your mortgage. So stick around for more of Ask the Experts here.
And that personal touch.
And the personal slap when we come back here on 570 News. And the folks from Power Mortgages join me today, Kevin Power, Ann Turner, and Jess Turner. You can give them a call at 519-886-1993. But throughout the hour, if you've got questions about your mortgage, call us at 519-570-2545. Out of town, 1-800-570-5715. Or you can call us hands-free on your cell phone at *570. Now, just before we get to our questions, the questions you should be asking your lending institution before you get a mortgage, let's go over and find out what Kevin has to say about today's show rate specials.
And Dave is really impressed with the new format of rate sheets that I provided him with today. It's the low-tech kind.
It's the tiny, it's not even a stick-it note. It's just a teeny piece of paper.
It's the one that you really got to get your mitts on to hang on to.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, for new business only, 5-year fixed-term mortgage, OAC, subject to credit approval. Rates can change at any time without any notice. Must close by August 4th, on or before August 4th. 3.19% for mortgages that are either purchase mortgages, purchase a home, refinance, or switch transfer. 3.19%. We have 10-year mortgage money available at 3.99%. And variable rate mortgage at prime minus 0.10% for a cost of borrowing of 2.90% today.
And if you'd like to take advantage of any of those rates, call Kevin right after the show at 519-240-2967. That's 240-2967. All right, troops, headphone time. We've got a phone call. We're going to go over to the phones and take a call from Keith. Hi there, Keith. You're on 570 News.
Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to call in. I have to say that a mortgage broker, in my opinion as a realtor, is the absolute top-of-the-line way to go for a mortgage. The 9-to-5ers at a bank, they go home at 5 o'clock, and if you haven't got your mortgage, they don't care. They still pick up their paycheck. But a mortgage broker is just like a commissioned real estate salesman like me, and they don't eat if they don't sell. And anyways, that's enough of the compliment. I wanted to ask a question. With modular homes, which are built to the same standard as a subdivision home, but on a plot of land that is a 21-year leased land, that is a full 21-year, we're having difficulty with financing these units. And one of the 9-to-5ers that we were talking about has cut the mortgage term, or the amortization, down to 16 years, which is 5 years less than the 21-year lease that you're given when you purchase the property. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas or thoughts on this. Is this CMHC that's doing it, or is it the bank, or what?
Thanks, Keith, and really appreciate the compliments. And that's really a great question, and one that I guess I'm going to put my thinking hat on, but I certainly do have some opinions about the circumstances. And modular homes are certainly a great product. I have worked with them in the past in terms of arranging financing, and there are some challenges that are associated to modular homes to begin with. Number one, a lot of financial institutions do not want to do them, whether it's on leased land or owned land. The problem arises is when the truck arrives with the modular units on them, they don't want to put the units on the basement that's been constructed unless they have received the money.
Right.
The financial institutions don't want to release the money until the modular unit is actually affixed to the basement, and you got a Mexican standoff or a chicken and an egg syndrome where one won't give on the other one.
Sorry to interrupt, but the reference that I was making is to existing modular homes that are on and anchored to the concrete pad.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, not the actual placement of one and doing the financing on them. Okay. It's a purchase of an existing one. Okay.
I guess they really
end up being financed very similar to mobile homes, and a number of changes have occurred just in recent weeks with regards to the financing on them. And in a lot of cases, they are tied either to the remaining life expectancy or age expectancy of the unit itself, and also to the remaining remaining term that's left on the lease. I've not heard of anybody actually reducing it from 21 years that's remaining down to 5. Not sure of the theory behind that, but I do know, and for a lot of years, actually, it's been really tied to the lease, and in a lot of cases, financial institution wants to see the leases in advance. I think
sure.
A lot of these changes that you're that not only you're facing on your side of the industry, Keith, but we as well, are changes that are being driven by the Minister of Finance and through OSFI, the Office of Superintendent of Financial Institutions. They're really coming out with some really heavy-handed things, in my opinion, that are
right.
having a negative impact in terms of financing on a lot of different things. In
exactly.
recent days, they have backed off on a number of things, including the having to qualify or requalify on renewal. They didn't see a whole lot of wisdom in that when some of the things were pointed out to them actually directly through the mortgage brokerage industry. So
right.
The only suggestion that I can make to you is if you're not getting very far with the financial institution that you have on arranging the financing based on a 21-year AM, you may want to talk to your client and get them to look at a different option and see if we can do something for you.
I do have an idea about why they're doing this. If the lease is running 21 years, then what the bank wants to do to lower its exposure or lower its risk to loss is to take a smaller amortization period, meaning that if the property goes into power of sale, that it is more attractive to have a property that has some time left on its lease time. That it, like the amortization period and the lease period don't run out at the same time. Because at that point, they aren't protected by having something that is as sellable. It's less sellable if you don't have a lease, but you do have a mortgage.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I sure do. Now, in this particular instance, when a person purchases one of the resale modulars, they are given a new 21-year lease. So, and the community, now this is owned by members. It's not a type of property that's owned by a corporation. It actually is a corporation that you become a member of. But
that still applies. If the mortgage is shorter than the lease, and there's still something of value left on the lease.
Right. Okay, we're going to have to hold that thought. We'll come back to it because we have to take a break. News is coming up at 11:30. Then we'll be back with more of Ask the Experts with Power Mortgages here on 570 News. Welcome back to the show. Kevin Power, Ann Turner, and Jess Turner are my guests today from Power Mortgages at 69 Regina Street North in Waterloo and online at powermortgages.ca. And just before the break, we had a really good call from Keith. I'd like to know how much you paid Keith to get him to say those nice things about mortgage brokers. But he had a really good question, and Ann just wanted to add something to it.
Yes, well, we're talking about why the lenders don't want to lend on these modular homes that are on leased land. Or if they do, they want the amortization period to be shorter than the length of the lease. And that is to reduce their risk. And that risk reduction mentality that is so prevalent right now in the lending industry includes this move by all of these major banks to have people put into collateral charge mortgages as opposed to standard charge mortgages. And to be quite frank, I don't understand this paranoia about reducing risk when Canada's default rate on mortgage loans is less than one-third of 1% in comparison to 5, 6, 7, 8% in the U.S. Talking about one-third of 1%, not even a whole percent, mm-hmm. where in the U.S. and many other countries, it is significantly higher. So why we're running around with like chickens with our heads cut off, worried about reducing risk exposure in Canada when our banking systems and our cultural mentality has not created an environment where there is huge risk to lending in Canada. Particularly, there's not huge risk to mortgage lending. And friends of ours do have one of these modular homes on leased land. And to be quite honest, you'd never be able to tell the difference between it and any other home. They look exactly the same as any other home. They're just put together in a factory, and or pieces are put together, and then they're put together on site, which I think is a fantastic way of building a property.
All right. Well, we keep promising everyone we're going to start going over the questions you should be asking your lender. So let's start that off with what is the first and foremost question you should ask?
I think the first thing you want to know is, are you required to tell me or disclose to me my cost of borrowing? And will you tell it to me? And by this we mean the true cost of borrowing.
Okay. And are they required to tell you?
No.
No.
Well, brokers are.
Different rules for the banks than there are for brokers. And that actually leads to another question that would be right up there at the top is, do you represent the lender or do you represent me? Who are you working for? And you know, when you're walking to a mortgage broker, they're representing you. And when you walk into a bank, they actually work for the bank. So whose interests are they keeping in mind?
And this has a lot to do with a number of the large banks trying to move away from doing business with brokers, because clearly our first loyalty is to our client, not the lender. We take our business and we take our client's business to the lender that best suits our client's needs, not to the person that pays our paycheck in a 9-to-5 job. We take the business where it is best for the client. We get paid the same regardless of where it goes, which lender we place it with, and it's not based on anything other than the size of the mortgage or the face value of the mortgage. It isn't based on how much in interest we create for that lender. So those things make us work in the best interests of our client. And banks can't say the same thing. They'd much rather have the road reps out trying to gather business and paying it finder's fees to people that don't know anything about the mortgage business and just are interested in getting a mortgage placed on a property, whereas we are very interested in the mortgage business as brokers and interested in getting the best possible mortgage and rate suited to that client.
A number of people, or pardon me, a number of lenders in recent months and in recent years have moved away, clearly moved away from the mortgage brokerage channel in terms of looking for business, and there are some changes that are happening even as we speak with a CIBC company that we've done a lot of business with in the last 20 years. And they're basically going more to in-branch road rep style of drafting business. And my own personal opinion on it is, I think it clearly states that we as mortgage brokerage companies or agents or brokerages itself and or brokers are very knowledgeable about some of the things that are happening in the industry, and particularly as it relates to these collateral charge term mortgage documents. And we're informing our clients of the pitfalls that are associated with them, some of the things that are happening on branch level, what things are basically removed from their options in terms of having mortgages that are secured by collateral mortgage charges. And I think the major financial institutions are having a big struggle with it. Mm-hmm. We're basically circumventing their program of doing these. We've, so far this year, we have done two mortgages in our office that are secured by collateral charge term mortgage documents. Clients were fully aware of the collateral charge term mortgage documents, not only the fact that they were collateral charged, but also the limitations and basically how these things are registered. They were fully knowledgeable about the product they were getting into. All other mortgages that we have been done secured by standard charge term mortgage documents, and I think it's a control thing. Mm-hmm. By the banks putting more of their road reps on the road, they are employees, they're going to toe the corporate line, whereas we, and particularly me, where I don't believe and I don't subscribe to these collateral charge term mortgage documents, we don't put our customers into them. So by basically moving around us as an industry and going basically direct, they've removed the possibility of people that are going to fight with them over the fact of registering or not registering collateral charge term mortgage documents.
Or even knowing that they've got a collateral charge term mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does for us, there's still lots of lenders that we deal with that are referred to as mono lines as opposed to bank lines. Bank lines basically have multiple products that they can offer. And that's why banks have really gotten into the mortgage business to begin with, is to create the opportunity to sell other products to the mortgage business that you're generating through the mortgage brokerage community. And with moving away from that, it just creates more greater opportunities, in my opinion, for clients to have a true separation of church and state, have their mortgages with a monoline lender that's not interested in selling them 100 other different products. And so take your mortgage business to one place, you're going to get an extremely competitive interest rate, and keep the rest of your business diversified with whatever financial institution you want.
All right, let's go over to the phones now. Gene has been waiting patiently, and he wants to make a comment. Hi, Gene, you're on 570 News.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's a great topic, and I appreciate all the experience you guys have on the radio here. The comment that I have is related to how the difference between Canadian and U.S. mortgages. A lot of people don't know that in the U.S., people walk away. Simple as that. In Canada, you're basically, your name and your entire credit history and everything else is fully tied to it. So that's one of the primary reasons why you saw a lot more defaults in the States outside of the increased volatility that they had. And then on top of that, the other serious component that is a significant difference that people don't know is in the U.S. they have exactly, right down to the percentage point, double the bankruptcy rate that we have because of healthcare. Healthcare drives basically the equivalent of our full bankruptcy rate on a rate per capita into that type of a scenario. And we don't have that here. So those are the kind of the two big factors that make the difference there. So it's very difficult to compare. There are two different economic environments of their rates versus ours. So I just wanted that to get out there. And the quick question I have, though, for the people in the audience and on the lines, is what do you think about increased disclosure? Because I think that's what's making our big six banks get away with basically a much less competitive environment than need be. And I think that's where there is an opportunity for both the mortgage brokerage channel as well as consumers alike, is increasing that disclosure, especially about getting out of mortgages. Those fees on the outside are just horrible. Yeah. So I'll just leave that to you guys, and thanks again for the great topic.
Okay, Gene, thanks for calling in. Who'd like to comment on Gene's comments first?
I think there's a bunch of people here got a mouthful of things to say about it.
We do. We're all chomping at the bit for that.
Everybody wants to get going. So, Jess, I'll let you have the first go at it.
We definitely are in favor of increased disclosure to protect the client. And the way the laws are written are different for mortgage brokers in what we have to disclose versus what the banks have to disclose. And that isn't fair, and it leaves clients and customers and borrowers with not all the information that they need. So, and specifically, he was talking about, you know, when you need to get out of a mortgage and penalties and all that not being disclosed properly. And I have friends who are going through that right now who had conversations that, you know, it wasn't disclosed completely to them, and they didn't understand. So I definitely believe it's important to have
full disclosure
and equal disclosure throughout the industry, whether you're a lender or a mortgage broker, mortgage agent. Everybody, the client still needs the same information. It shouldn't matter whether it's a broker or a bank disclosing it. What is disclosed is what should be standardized and is not.
Whether you're dealing with a bank directly or you're dealing through a brokerage, the need to know this information is the same for the client. So why does the Bank Act allow the banks to run with so little disclosure being made on their part? I don't understand that. If the government is there writing these laws to protect the consumer, then why haven't they written it into the Bank Act saying the bank must disclose these things to the client as well? So right now we're not getting full disclosure on interest rates, the effective rate of interest, and we're not getting full disclosure on the costs of getting out of mortgages or breaking mortgages. And we aren't getting full disclosure in terms of what kind of mortgage you're getting, or whether it's standard charge or collateral. And the lenders have gotten away with this because the whole industry is so complex. I mean, you look at a mortgage document and it can be, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 pages of tiny print. Who the heck wants to read that? And if you do take the time to read it, it's in legalese, so how do you understand what the heck's being said? You know, even if you do take that time. And because it is so complex and the documents are so complex, the financial calculations are so complex, you really have to have someone explaining them to you. And if you can't understand them, because not everybody can understand this kind of math and legal talk, then you have to trust the person that's trying to explain it to you to do the right thing by you.
Now, Anne's brought up a very valid point about legalese, but it even becomes more complex than that. And I'll just walk you through basically how things work with us in terms of the disclosure that we're required to provide under the Mortgage Brokers Act, what happens between the time that we complete all the documents, we have the file complete with the lender, and they send paperwork to the lawyer, and basically the client goes in and sits down at the lawyer's office. And our disclosure basically is all done up front, which basically relates to the cost of borrowing, any fees related to CMHC, or other default insurance, appraisal cost, any legal fees or title insurance cost is all disclosed in advance. The mortgage company, the actual mortgage lender, then sends what is called mortgage instructions to the lawyer's office, telling them basically they've approved the mortgage, here's the amount, here's the terms and conditions, here's the closing date, and The lawyer will then proceed to do all the things that they need to do, title searches, prepare all the documents, arrange for the clients to come in, the borrowers to come in. Part of the documents that are sent to the lawyer a day or so prior to the closing, it's sent after mortgage instructions are done. It's called borrower disclosure statements. All financial institutions are required to provide disclosure documents to the borrower on closing. So you have a timing issue in that most people are not going in to sign their documents until 24 to 48 hours prior to, and you're handed this big package of documents by your lawyer because that's the way the system is set up to do it. Even at that point in time, if you're the most knowledgeable person in the world and can read through the disclosure documents, the time that you have available to be able to ask questions, to try and have changes made, or even switch to a different lender, you don't have the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you're really held hostage by the fact that you don't have the time. Financial institutions are covered because they've done their legal fiduciary duty in terms of supplying these cost of borrowing documents.
But not in time to allow a borrower to make a decision based on that disclosure, and if that decision is not to move forward with this particular mortgage, to find another lender with conditions more favorable to them.
My guests today on Ask the Experts, Kevin Power, Ann Turner, and Jess Turner of Power Mortgages at 69 Regina Street North in Waterloo, online at powermortgages.ca, and you can call their office at 519-886-1993. Going to take a short break and be back with more of Ask the Experts right here on 570 News. Thanks so much for being with us. Kevin Power, Ann Turner, and Jess Turner of Power Mortgages are my guests. Ann is taking photographs of us at the moment, so we'll go over to Kevin and let him do his show rate specials while Ann makes us look pretty.
Ann, she needs a lot of help.
She's going to have...
I'm not taking a picture of myself.
You have a copy of Photoshop, do you? You can doctor us up later? Excellent.
Yes, I do.
Perfect. Anyway, five-year fixed-term mortgage money, new business only, purchase, refinance, switch transfer must close by August 4th, 3.19%. We have 10-year money available at 3.99. We have variable rate mortgage available at prime minus 0.10% for a rate of 2.90 for five-year variable rate.
If you'd like to take advantage of any of those rates, call Kevin as soon as the show is done at 519-240-2967. That's 240-2967. As we continue with the topic today, which is the questions you should be asking your lending institution before you sign on the dotted line for a mortgage. So what else do we need to cover in our last 7 minutes of the show?
Well, I'm just going to lead us down that path. But before I do, I want to mention I did snap a couple of pictures off my iPhone there of Ann. She didn't get away with it.
So. I was just taking them because I think they should be on our website. All of our radio shows we post up on our website so that you can listen to them, or if they thought one was particularly helpful to you, then you can send someone to the site to hear them. They go up about a week after we've done the show, and you're welcome to go to our website and listen to any show we've got posted there.
We're also on Facebook, so you can become one of our friends on Facebook, and we have posted on there the different podcasts as well that you can listen to.
And
are we expecting any of our friends from the banks to join our Facebook page?
They've tried. Okay, so what I want to talk about here is just we were bringing up the questions. What is it you should ask somebody, you know, before you decide to have them represent you and help you find a mortgage? And I want to stress that what you're looking for is this personal service we were talking about earlier that is so lacking. You want to ask them, how likely is it that you're going to be the person who handles my mortgage on renewal? Are you going to be able to reassess my mortgage needs for me in the future if my economic situation changes, marital status, income,
illness,
if you find you're going to move or you're going to refinance? Are you going to be there for me? Are you going to be the person who knows me, knows my situation, and going to be able to help me out in the future? Also, are you going to keep me informed of changes in the industry or the economy that might affect my mortgage? Or my mortgage options. And what you're looking for here is somebody who's going to be building a strategy for you, that they're going to know, be able to build a long-term strategy for you, and that they're going to be keeping you in mind as things in the industry change. If there's things that may be applicable to you, that you're being kept informed. So you want to ask those questions to find out if you're getting somebody who's looking out for your interests and if they're keeping you in mind.
We have a phone call. Do you want to take another phone call?
We do.
Let's go over to the call. Let's go over to the lines. Take a call from Mike, who's calling in from Kitchener. Hi, Mike. You're on 570 News.
Hi. How are you?
Doing well. What's your question today?
I was wondering, as a first-time home buyer, I'm going to have about $15,000 to $20,000. What do you think I should be investing in, home value-wise?
I guess, Mike, if you're looking at it strictly from a down payment point of view, the minimum down payment would be 5% of the purchase price. So if you got $15,000, the maximum price range of home that you should be looking at is $300,000.
Yeah.
Now, that's also dependent on a lot of other factors as well in terms of your income.
Exactly, yeah.
The basically the other costs of the home, the property taxes. Exactly. Heating cost and any other indebtedness like that. That you have.
And also, Mike, is some of that money set aside for your closing costs, or is that $15,000 all for down payment, or do you need that as well for closing?
Well, I'm going to have anywhere between $15,000 to $20,000 to put down on the house, so that has to include all the closing costs. You know, if I do it myself, then obviously I'm going to be saving the commission cost, right? So, I don't know.
Commission cost on what?
On the house.
you're looking at buying a private sale as opposed to buying an MLS listed property. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, for retailing. I own a business, so I get confused sometimes. What was I saying? Instead of going through like a broker or real estate.
Okay. Like basically, I'm full of opinions. Some people like some of my opinions. A lot of people don't. In terms of what you're talking about on private sales, my opinion is there really is no savings to the purchaser. The true benefit that comes down is actually in most cases a benefit to the seller who's getting the full price for the property. They're going to sell it to you for what it is worth. The big difference is that they're putting all the money in their pocket as opposed to the real estate commissions being paid out to a real estate company.
Now, I just want to mention there, if you're the purchaser, you're not the one paying real estate agent fees. It's the vendor who pays the real estate agent. So there's that isn't a cost savings for you. But in terms of what you need to do with your down, what you have for your down payment and closing costs, is consider what exactly you're going to have left over for closing. But Kevin did mention, you know, of course, it's based on income and whatnot. If you think you're going to have $15,000 for everything altogether, then you need to basically take off what it is you need for closing, and that lowers what the actual down payment is. So, you know, in reality, that might be closer to $200 or $250 if you, let's say, had $15,000 for down payment and closing.
All right, we've got about a minute and 20 seconds left in the show. What would you like to say to wrap it up today?
I think what I'd like to say is have a good summer. If you're house hunting, then please go to your financial lender, to your financial institution, but preferably to a mortgage broker, and get that put in place before you do any shopping, so there'll be no surprises and no disappointments. And please reconsider how you think about these lending institutions and what relationship you have with them and what relationship they have with you, and do what's in your best interest, because they're certainly doing what's in their best interest.
And Dave, I've got a personal message for you.
Uh-oh.
And that's got to deal with 2 months from now. I'm actually going to be going away on vacation for a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
Back to my home province. So I'll be bobbing around in a boat in Conception Bay, catching codfish, and thinking about Dave and the fact that he's not going to have the access to the fresh air and the salt water Really good, and some really good fresh codfish.
Or some salt in the wheel.
I'll still just be here doing Ask the Experts.
Give me a dark, smoky bar instead.
And apparently going to a dark, smoky bar with Ann and Jess. So there we go. You have a lovely summer, everyone.
You too, Dave.
And if you still have questions about what you've heard on the show today, give the folks a call at 519-886-1993. Or visit them at 69 Regina Street North in Waterloo, online at powermortgages.ca. More of Ask the Experts coming up after the noon news here on 570 News.